We have instrumentation. We have opportunity. Well, so you can't fall down today without you fall on an opportunity. And as we learn, we've got, I don't know how many, somebody, I saw some statistics the other day. Well, I think we'll give them right out here today on the number of engineers we have. I don't know whether they're SAE or not, but nevertheless, we have an enormous, there isn't a kind of technical thing in the world that you can think of that you can't get done today. There's no art, trade, or profession in the world that you can't get the thing done. So you don't have to know too much yourself, which is very comforting. But what you do need to know is procedure. And therefore, we think one of the greatest things in engineering education is to teach procedure. How do you go about analyzing your problem? Any new problem that comes along, you pull it apart, you know how to do at least 80 or 90% of it. Then you know a little bit about another 10%, and you finally get out that you only have to determine a few percent of the unknown, and then you know, all we had to do to build a diesel locomotive was to get a prime mover that would run. We had generators, motors, and air brakes, and all that sort of thing. And the main thing about these diesel engines that we have on these railroads is one thing in there, in that our piston rings don't stick. And now if you want to see profound analysis, mathematical in other words, I'd like for you to read a stack of papers we have proving that you never could make a diesel engine that wouldn't groove the cylinder where the top piston ring stops. Why it didn't stick it to the groove at the bottom, I don't know. Well, so we finally worked for about 10 years and learned how to measure the distribution of temperature around over the piston. And we found this very, very interesting thing, that if you keep the ring groove, the top ring groove, below the polymerization temperature of oil, why, of course, you can't form any gum and you don't stick the ring. And the fellow said, my God, it can't be that simple. Well, I said, did you ever measure the temperature? He says, no, but we calculated it. Well, you can't calculate that temperature up there. You don't know enough about the factors. But now we know how to measure them very easily. And the fellow said, well, I know. But then he said, that don't seem right. Of course, they've made a lot of improvement in lubricating oils, which they have, to be sure. Anything you want to do, you can do. If you don't want to hide behind a couple of Latin synonyms or Greek synonyms, somebody can teach you how to do it. So far as exhausting the land, so far as exhausting our iron ore, so far, there's always another way of doing it. The only possible thing that we can run out of within any reasonable length of time is going to be phosphorus. And that's going to take about 12 or 1400 years at the rate we're using it now, which may not concern anybody here. But we know where it's going to be. It's all going to be out in the ocean. And we know where it is out there, and so we can get it and bring it back. We were one of the first miners of the sea. When we started to make ethyl gas, we had to have bromine. And there'd never been but 800,000 pounds of bromine made in the world per year. And that'd been used in photography and bromo cell. There's 1 pound of bromine in the seawater for every 10 tons of seawater. Right away, out come a slide rule. The fellow says you can't afford to evaporate that much water for a pound of bromine. We didn't. We just evaporated a pound of bromine and left the water alone. Last year, we took 125 million pounds out down at Freeport with the Ethyl Dow Corporation down there. I wish you could see the letters and the publications when we proposed taking bromine out of seawater. It's been amazing to me that almost every one of these new things we've done has been most opposed by the group that should have done it. I don't know why that was, but nevertheless, that's been the case. We've recently put out these new high-compression gasoline engines. The whole industry knew that that was wrong, but I said, why do you worry about it? Let the engine go, and if you give a fellow one of those engines and he keeps it, it's all right. And somebody mentioned about economists here tonight. I wish you could see the economic reports that was made as to why you couldn't have a diesel locomotive on a railroad. was perfectly amazing. Yeah? I had one of the New York banks got a report about that ticket and said, will you read that before you go ahead and spend any more General Motors money on the thing? I said, no, I won't. I said, the title isn't even right. And the title was this, the comparative cost of operating steam locomotives vs. diesel locomotives. I said, you don't know what the cost of operating steam locomotives are. No two divisions on any railroad keep their costs the same way. So I said, you'd have to put the word probable in there. The fellow said, that's right. Probable cost of operating steam locomotives. And I said, what does the word probable mean in percentage? Well, finally we agreed on 15% plus or minus. See, that's nice. That's a nice loose fit. So I said, the probable cost of operating steam locomotives is within 30%, see? V.S. I said, we'll leave that stand, see? The pet prejudices of a guy who never saw a diesel locomotive, see? Now I said, do you think human progress ought to be influenced by that kind of an analysis at all? I said, the only thing that you can do is to make one of them. Put it out on the railroad, and if the fella keeps it, the locomotive's all right, and if he sends it home, it's no good. And no way can you figure that out but giving it to him. So I'm a great believer in samples. So if you let make the sample, just don't argue about it. Because you can make the sample sometimes in half of the time, with half of the effort that you'd write the long-range report as to why it couldn't be done. See? We have one glorious example of a type of dynamometer that we have in our research laboratory in which two reports were prepared that are at least 2 inches thick, which proved that we couldn't do that. And while they were being written, we rigged up a couple of little devices, and then when they brought the reports in, they let them see. Well, they said, of course, if you're going to do it that way, well, it'll work. What do we want to do? What is the thing that needs to be done, eh? You can't write it over there on the wall. It's too much to it. See? Why don't we do it? The only reason is because it wasn't like something else. And if you can let the problem dictate, just as you were talking about your antenna, put it out there, get some engineers to make it for what it is and not because it has to be like something else. You can't write the future of this country. Because nothing that you can think of that we need that we can't do. If we raise too many potatoes, well, of course, that is not an economic or an engineering problem. That's legal. But what do you want? How many roads do you want? How many railroads? How many airplanes? How many anything do you want? We know how to do it today. And so you can't write the possibilities of this country in any way, shape, or form, but what you do better than. Every time we want to do something, the people want to get a committee. And I'm always very willing to do it. Because after that committee makes the decision, if they're a little bit on the ragged edge of being old, I'll bet you on 10-1 odds the committee is wrong. Because they don't want to do the thing different than what they've been doing it. And so, get the committee's report, and then you know exactly what to do. A friend of mine said, why is it that you're the only man that's been associated with this automobile and fuel business that's always been right on the fuel thing? Well, I said, I always ask the oil companies about it, and they always tell me the wrong thing. So it's perfectly simple to find out. Go ask them what they think the oil or the gasoline is going to be in 2 years from now, and then you know that isn't right. See? Now, I don't think they intend to misinform you. I think they're simply trying to be safe. So that if you're going to do new things, analyze a thing from its natural, its material and energy relationship. One of the gentlemen was talking to me here tonight about some friends of mine, and they mentioned the Wright brothers. Well, I happened to have known them while they was working on the airplane, and I learned to fly on the Wright Model B, which was the second one. That's the one that had wheels in addition to skids. And we have this telegram where the boys flew down in Kitty Hawk, and they wired their sister. This is on the 17th of December. And they said, we've had three successful flights today, and we're very happy, and we're going to be home for Christmas. So she thought that was quite a thing, as her brothers had flown in a heavy air machine with an engine, because that had been proven many times over that it couldn't be done. Eh? Of course, the birds had been doing it, but they were dumb animals, and that didn't count. Eh? So she rang up the local newspaper, and the fellow's still on this newspaper down there, and so he's the one who told me the story. And he said, she read the telegram to him. He said, that's wonderful. I'm glad to know the boys are going to get home for Christmas. Well, now, the only difference between them and the other people was that they tried it. See? So don't let anybody talk you out of the thing. See? You can run an experimental laboratory in your backyard or any place else. If you'd like to try something a certain way, don't go and ask somebody what it'll do. If you want to plant a bean upside down, don't ask somebody about it. Try it. Because the answer you'll get will usually be wrong. See? Because I talk to the bean instead of the man. It's like the library. We have this great argument, when do you go to the library on a problem? Well, I say, work the problem out and think what you want to do, then go to the library and see if somebody has done the same thing. See? But if you can prove anything you want, you name it, and I'll go and get you two equally authoritative books that'll say it will and it won't work. In fact, you can even get doctors to disagree to that extent. I mean medical doctors. Fellow says, what am I going to do? He says, my wife is very ill. I got six doctors on the job. Three says she had to have an operation, and three said she shouldn't. Well, I says, that's 50-50. I says, you better get a seventh and find out what it is. We can't get agreement on these things. So what did they do? We start to try them out. So with the great end. 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 So with the great engineering technical background that you get at this wonderful institution, let's teach two things. Let's teach the experimental evaluation approach, and let's let a few guys who can't pass your entrance examination that looks as though they were smart enough to look after themselves, get into your institution and get the kind of an education they can get. And don't try to teach them everything that they don't want. Your opportunities are unlimited if your imagination is also. Thank you so much.